Hey everybody, welcome to Marooncast, where we talk about design, lifestyle, and entrepreneurship. I am Hector Real, alongside with my co-host, Ben Wetzel.
Hey!
We are professional designers with 20 years of experience, and we aim to help you be more successful with your creative endeavors. In this episode, we are going to be talking about some questions that we found on a subreddit, on a freelancing subreddit, and we feel like we should address those questions based on our experiences. Obviously, everybody's experience is going to be a little bit different, so we will give it to you from our perspective and what we have experienced during our career. Now, I'd also like to say that if you have any questions of your own, please do go to our website, www.maroonvaultstudio.com, and go to the contact section and drop your question, and we will address it as quickly as we can in our forthcoming episodes. But if you don't want to do that, you can go ahead and add me on my Instagram. I'm pretty active on Instagram, and my handle is at I am Hector Real. That's at I am Hector Real. If you want to drop me a DM or comment on one of my posts, if it has something to do with design, I will be happy to answer it within a couple sentences. But if it's a much longer answer, I'll just go ahead and address that into our future podcast, if that's okay. How does that sound, Ben?
That sounds like a plan.
All right. That does sound like a plan.
It does.
Hey, Ben?
Yeah?
Guess what I heard a couple days ago?
Uh-oh. What did you hear?
Are you familiar with a certain Southeast Asian restaurant called Jollibee?
Oh my gosh, maybe. What's Southeast Asia? No, just kidding. I know a lot about Jollibee.
Really? Would you explain to our listeners what Jollibee is?
Jollibee is a delicious fast food restaurant that started in the Philippines, and it has sugary pasta.
Mmm. It's so good. I mean, if you don't, you probably don't know how we look like. Well, I'm Filipino, and Ben is, what are you, Ben?
Euro mutt.
I mean, okay, I'll take that.
Fine. Scottish, German, and Irish, mostly, with a speckle of Mediterranean.
In percentage terms, what is that?
The Mediterranean part?
Yeah, like, all those parts.
Like 5% and below in Mediterranean?
Well, I was trying to set you up in a sense where you'll do all the math. Oh. And in the end, it's going to be like 175%. And I'd be like, you can't be 175% of anything.
Nope. No, that's not going to happen. Oh, well. I don't even know it that well enough.
Well, anyway, what we wanted to get into is the fact that Jollibee, a Southeast Asia, Filipino, actually, fast food restaurant, has bought Los Angeles' own Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf 2 days ago for $350 million.
That's a big purchase.
It is a big purchase. It doesn't seem as big as what I thought it would be to buy out a franchise. Like, is that a franchise?
I think it's, well, when I was working for them, they were family owned.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they have a significant amount of stores, especially on the West Coast. And obviously they're all over the nation, but it's a lot of stores, and Jollibee just outright bought them for $350 million. And so I would suspect more, but maybe they weren't doing as well as I thought. Now, my other curious question would be, are they going to keep it as Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, or are they going to turn it into a Jollibee coffee shop or a Jollibean?
Ooh. I would prefer the latter, just because I like puns, but...
I do too. I don't know why people get pissed off about puns. I love puns. Well, you're also really good at dad jokes, Ben. And here's the thing.
Me personally?
You personally. And here's the thing about Ben, if you all don't know, and you probably don't. Ben has a ton of dad... He has some good jokes, but he has some dad jokes here and there. And here's the thing. He doesn't have any kids.
Yay.
That he knows of.
That I know of.
Well, shall we have at it?
Yeah, let's get this thing rolling.
Okay, here we go. So the first question that we have is essentially a billing question. You want to reel into it, Ben?
Oh, yeah, the billing question. Sure. So someone on the freelancer subreddit had a pretty big problem, and the question had a lot of weight to it, in my opinion. And basically, the question is, what do I do with clients that want to monitor my time, like straight up put monitoring software on my own personal computers or download it onto my phone. There's a bunch of different varieties of scenarios out there, but it's all pretty, well, intense in my opinion.
Now, I can address this from the perspective of the designer and the perspective of the employer. The first thing is that, are you a designer who works for this company full-time as a W-2, or are you a 1099 or freelance designer for this company? That's the first question that should be addressed. I'm going to start on the employer side, actually.
Sure, let's go for it.
Well, I understand why employers like to do this, whether you're freelance or not. They're trying to basically keep their costs down and cut their costs and save wherever they can. And so they want you to account for every single minute that you spend on the project as if you are an hourly designer.
Sure. No, it makes sense. Like,
well, it does. And if you're a business owner, that makes absolute sense. Is it right or wrong? You know, we can get into that another time. But in this situation, I'll get into the designer side. And essentially, the quick answer to that is I'm not down.
Right.
So as I've said, you know, every business is always trying to keep their costs down so that they can generate revenue and then profit. So that way, everybody makes money. But that does kind of make the designer feel like they're being nickel and dimed. And as a creative person, the way that we go through projects, the way we come up with our ideas, and the way that we design things is not linear in that sense.
Right.
You know, there are sometimes, well, you'll come up with a brilliant design in 10 minutes, and sometimes you've got nothing in 10 days.
Right.
But the entire process should be paid for. And that doesn't necessarily mean you'll be on the computer the entire time.
Which I think is where there's sort of a hard understanding there. Because, you know, I think they want to monitor everything you're doing because, at least on the computer side, because they, you know, time is, like you said, time is money. And they want to make sure that they're getting their money's worth. But like you said, if you go to the coffee shop, on the walk to the coffee shop, you might get that idea that ends up becoming the final logo. But you weren't on the computer and you weren't using Illustrator. So,
right, exactly. And a lot of times, if you're like me, and I'm sure a lot of you are, I'll get an idea just before I fall asleep, write down my notebook and forget all about it until I wake up the next day and find something in my notebook.
Right.
So, you know, just to kind of emphasize is that companies just want to do this because they're keeping an eye and they're accounting for all the finances they are burning within running the business. And that's understandable. I personally don't like it that way, and I would never do that. I am an employer, and I wouldn't do anything of that sort, but different businesses call for different types of ways to measure time and the way they spend their money. So, again, I'm not into it, but it there's a reason why they do it, and it's not always evil.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to answer the same question from the designer's perspective. The designer was asking what
should I do? I mean, you know, he was a freelancer being asked to put this monitoring software on his computer.
The way I'd go about this situation is that since I don't agree with them putting anything on my computer, and, you know, whether you trust the company or not, sometimes the developer of that third-party software may or may not be someone you can trust. The company may not know anything about it. You may not know anything about it, but the developer may or may not have a keylogger on that.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm against any client installing anything on my own computer. I mean, I guess if they have a computer that they're going to give to you, like a corporate computer.
Sure.
That might make a little bit of sense. I'm still not down for it, but that makes more sense. So I wouldn't have any client install anything on your own personal or your personal work computer at all.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a good idea at all.
Right. And, you know, like I said, they may or may not realize that it may be a totally legit third-party software, but there's a chance that it may not be legit at all.
That and, you know, if you're working from home as a freelancer and you have all these, you have your own personal work, you have other clients' right. work, on your computer, it's sort of, I mean, it might be, in a way, it's probably negating some NDAs for some other stuff. So it's like, you got to treat all, as a freelancer, you need to make sure you're treating all your clients fairly. So if someone's really going to pressure you to put to use monitoring software, I wouldn't really even want it on my phone, but I would prefer it on the phone versus my actual computer. And I would prefer that they supply a computer if they really want me to do that. And if I really need the money.
Right. Exactly. So that's the other part of the question we're going to get into. My suggestion to a company like this, depending on your industry and how important this is to your industry, some industries require this and projects require this. And you know, that might be the standard. It isn't where the projects that I work on. So my answer, coming from my own experiences, is that I would basically decline the project. It's too much of an overseeing for my tastes. And generally for me, it'd be more of a headache to stay on this project and be more annoying. And it's just not worth it for me. Now, if you're an established designer, established creative, whatever part of the creative industry you're in, and you're established and you are able to and have the ability to say no to a project like this, yes, I would definitely say decline the project. Don't burn bridges. Don't get all pissed off. Just say, you know what? I'm sorry. That's not a thing that I do or something that I'm comfortable with. So I respectfully decline the project. If I see or hear of anyone who is interested, I will refer them to you. The other situation would be you may just be right out of college and you may not have any money and you might need this project. So you may not be in a position to decline a project. So if that happens and you have to take the project, just make sure, number one, ask them if they have a corporate computer because you're uncomfortable of them installing any third-party software on your personal computer. And also, pro tip right here, the word uncomfortable is a trigger word for most people, basically saying that, you're basically making them feel bad of how you feel about the situation without actually offending them. So that's trigger word. So there's going to be a lot of those that we'll talk about throughout many of the podcasts, but this is usually when you want to use really concise phrases. But let me digress for that and go back to the initial subject. Basically, say you're uncomfortable with them putting any third-party software on your own computer. And but if you'd really like to do it, have them supply you with a laptop. And you might be in a situation where, hey, you will have to put it into your personal computer. And I would just say, keep an eye on it right when the project's finished. Go ahead and delete that third-party software. You know, it's a complicated situation where you have to accept a situation like this. I still personally would say, unless you have absolutely no choice, I would still decline it because it's easier for you to find a client that appreciates you for your work and for your time, and obviously respect your clients at the same time and finish your design and your projects on time and with great quality.
Yeah. And if you really, like you said, if you really have to do it, then just go through the motions, but try to find a new client to fill in that old one that's being problematic as soon as possible, because it just seems like a real pain in the butt to work with. You know, it's just not fun.
And part of it is also, you know, I'm going to get into kind of a sub-subject of this, and that's basically the race to the bottom. When clients are asking you to bid for a project, to cut costs immediately without even getting a project brief, that's essentially the race to the bottom.
Right.
And you don't want to, as a freelancer, you should know what your skills are worth. And if they're trying to get you to bid against another creative person or another creative agency, I'm not into that either. I disagree with that. I feel that designers work hard, and other creatives, not just designers, creatives, musicians, writers, whatever, they work really hard at their skills and they should not be undercut for their skills. It's a different situation where, hey, I'm a small company. I don't really have much money. Here's my budget. And if you like that company, you believe in what that company stands for, and you want to just work with our budget, you can. That's a different situation. What I'm talking about is that, hey, you're charging $100 for this project, but Ben said he'd do it for 80.
Right.
And then he'd come back to me and he'd be like, well, Ben said he'd do it for 80. Well, you do it for 70, and I'll say 70, and then it's a race to the bottom, and you just don't want to get into that situation. Again, my answer would be like, I respectfully decline.
Yeah. Yeah, the big question that we've seen a lot out there is basically, yeah, what do you do to compete against lower prices, especially from the people that can go crazy low that aren't in, like, European or Canada, the United States, places where the cost of living is much, much, much lower. And, I mean, I think the big one to take away from there is make sure you're better.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, to be completely honest, yeah, it's you as a designer, you live off of your skill set. People are hiring you because you have a very unique in demand skill, and they should be willing to pay for that. Like I said, there are exceptions. If you like the company, you believe what they do, or if they're a nonprofit company, you believe in that, then that's a different situation. But, you know, when you go and compete with, you know, other countries who have creative skills, you should be able to be at a level where that doesn't bother you because your skills are superior. And that sounds like such a douchey thing to say, but honestly, just like anything else, be the best at what you're doing. You know, if you love what you do, you're getting paid to be creative. That's a big deal.
It is.
You know, some people get paid a lot of money, but they hate their jobs. And I should hope that if you're in the creative business, apart from any weird deadlines or situations, I should hope that you love what you do.
Right.
So keep at it, stay on your game, and keep your skills sharp. And you don't have to compete against the lowest bidder. If it's simply a situation of somebody with less skills from a, you know, from maybe a different country to say, here's my portfolio, but I'm only charging $50. And let's say you're charging $100. You show them your portfolio and you say, hey, I charge $100. And that employer should be able to look at your portfolio and their portfolio and say, clearly, this is worth $100.
Right. The extra 50 is worth it.
Yeah. So the other part of that is stay on your game, be sharp. You know, you're a creative, just like anything else. Keep practicing.
Yeah.
So the takeaway from that segment is basically learn when to say no. I know it's hard when you don't have any money, but you have to say no, because sometimes if you say yes, then it's going to be much more of a headache and much more trouble than if you would have said no to begin with. And yeah, it may have been more difficult to find a client, but more often than not, if you say no the first time, the next client you'll get will be a much easier client to work with.
Yeah, hopefully, man. That, I like that.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good one.
Learn to say no. Okay, well, that brings us to the second question. And what is that second question, Ben?
Oh, the second question was that how do I keep clients from like doing one-offs, or how do I make a better client retention? I want repeat customers, you know.
Right. And that's totally valid. That's what every freelancer and design agency wants. How to retain the clients as a freelancer.
Right.
So the biggest thing with design, especially now, because the design industry is growing, and it has been growing the last 6 years based on a Bloomberg article. And it's going to keep growing, especially with people being more familiar with 3D programs and 3D printing and prototyping.
It's getting easier and easier.
Yeah. And you know, political situations aside, it's relatively easy to gain access to a factory overseas, like China and Vietnam, the Philippines, India, or wherever.
Right.
So now the question really is how to retain clients as a freelancer. And that's basically what everybody in the creative industry wants to have. You want that retainer contract.
Yeah. I mean, businesses want it. It's not just a freelancing thing. I mean, obviously, this is from a freelancer's perspective. But I mean, who doesn't want someone to continually come back because they enjoy your work?
Right. So it's a large, it's not a simple kind of step-by-step thing. And I can go into a large segment with it. But for right now, really what we want to focus on is that when you first get a client, the biggest thing you want to do is under promise, over deliver. I'm going to say that again. Under promise, over deliver. What I mean by that is whatever the design brief is, give them exactly what they want. Obviously, it's going to be better than what they think because you're going to be a skilled designer, as I assume all of our listeners are. And what you're going to do is you're going to add more than what they expect. So they're going to expect what they requested because that's what they requested. But if you add more, you will be over-delivering. And trust me, there's method to my madness. Yes, I understand that it's more work. Yes, I understand that it's more out of your time. But count this as an investment to future contracts. So when the client gets the project that they requested, they're going to be happy. And then you add the, but wait, there's more. So for us as Maroon Vault, that is the name of our design studio arm, is that generally we give them what they request, but we give them three additional levels of that. It's what we call our good, better, best. So if they request a design solution, we'll give them that design. That is the good. That is what they're asking for. That's right. level good.
Level good.
The other thing is that we'll give them a step above that, a design, another solution, a step, another iteration of that first design that's better and slightly more expensive than the first, and that is the better of the two designs. But wait, there's more. So now the client's happy. They've got what they asked for and they're happy with that. But holy shit, you've given them something better. They're even happier. And you reach into your design pocket and you pull out another solution that's what?
The best.
Ben is correct. So you've given them the good, which is what they asked for. You've given them the better, which is what they didn't ask for, but a level better. But a level above that is the best. So now they have three solutions that they're looking for. And now in their minds, they're basically saying, holy crap, we only paid you for one, but you're giving me three? Over-delivering is the key to impressing your clients so much that any other company or individual that they work for after you will never be on the same level unless they do the same thing. So what you're giving them is value for their money. Now, here's the thing why that works for the creative industry for us. It may not work for every single aspect of the creative industry, but at least in the product design, industrial design industry, we do this constantly as a company because at least at my team's skill level, my team is good enough to be able to kill these projects relatively quickly. So in addition to that, my team, including myself, we all love our jobs. So it's not really a big deal to come up with another iteration of that. Because when you go through the ideation phases of design, you already have 10, 20, 30, 50 other ideas that you're working with anyway. You just pick one of those as a final design. Well, just pick three.
Right.
And you know, you're able to provide three different solutions telling the client that you were actually thinking about this. They're impressed because they're getting so much more for their money. And that's going to leave a mark on essentially what they expect from other designers. Even if they hire another designer after you, they're always going to remember what you did. And the reason why I know this works is because I do it constantly. I underpromise, saying something to the effect of, oh, I don't know if I can do that in that span amount of time. Let me see what I can do. That's also another trigger word or trigger phrase, is let me see what I can do. Essentially saying, I'll try my best, but it's probably impossible. And then you deliver the impossible. Damn, look at that.
Boom.
I should have written that down. Maroon Vault Design Company. We deliver the impossible.
Hey, man, it works out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's the, and you know, clients are going to remember that. Clients are going to remember that you went above and beyond. And so what happened to me and how I learned this part of design is I would constantly do this because that's how I was trained in the design school that I graduated, in the design school that I graduated from, which is Art Center College of Design in Pasadena. We were always taught to kind of like over deliver.
Yeah.
Because we are in competition, not just with other colleagues, but other design companies.
Right. Absolutely.
So essentially what happened with one of my companies that I worked with is that I work with a lot of the C-level executives, your CFO, CEOs, you know, marketing, and all those guys. And they've seen my work because I'd have to present it in front of the C-level executives after I finish a design. And constantly doing this, they knew who I was instead of, oh, he's just the designer. No, he's not just the designer. He is Hector, the guy who designed all these items and the guy who designed all these solutions. So here's what happened a few years later. So a couple of years later, obviously the company's growing, but the executive team were also moving on to other companies, becoming CEOs of other companies. And as they become executives of further companies, they kept my contact information. In fact, one of the guys, he was the executive vice president of a particular company. He said, comes into my office and he said, hey, Hector, come with me. We're going to lunch. I said, yeah, sure. Free lunch. Awesome. So we went to lunch and he said to me, he said, hey, I wanted to have lunch with you because I want to let you know that I'm leaving the company because I'm going to be a CEO of another company. Although I really like your work, so I'd like to have your contact information for perhaps some design and freelancing solutions whenever we get to that. And multiple executives did that out of this same company. So out of one company, four executives left that started their own businesses and became CEOs of those four businesses. And now I have five.
Yeah.
So it's all kind of connected together. And the point of this kind of like the long explanation with an anecdote that basically says, when you over deliver, people are not going to forget how awesome what you did for them is.
Right. You got to make that impression. I mean, right. At the end of the day, if you really want clients to keep coming back, you need to make that impression. And if you don't, then you're probably not going to get the same repeat customers. I mean, why do we go to a bakery that we like? Right. Is it because they make awful bread? No, it's because they make amazing bread.
Right.
So, I mean, same thing with Starbucks. I mean, although it's not as good as it used to be.
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming. The coffee aficionado that you are.
Yep, yep, yep. So, you know, I mean, people have repeat customers for a reason, and you need to pertain that or you need to retain that information for yourself. Like, what can I do to make this person enjoy working with me? What can I do to impress this person with my own work? And what can I do to communicate my ability to support them no matter what? And when you're that type of support structure, people are going to be interested in calling you again.
You're absolutely right. And another way to put that is to basically say, if you were that other person, if you were the executive, and you were talking to yourself, will you have beer with you?
Right.
I hope that made sense.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Like, exactly. Would you enjoy a social outing with this person?
Right. So in addition to that, you're a cool guy that people would have beer with, and you give them excellent work.
Right.
That's like the perfect employee.
Right.
You know, so keep that in mind. Definitely make an impact. And like I said, I know sometimes it's a lot more work, but trust me, it'll pay off.
Right. When you have three retainers from one project, you know, it starts to show.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, that's, again, another subject that we can go into mad detail about. So if that's something you would like us to touch into a bit more on a single episode or a future episode, let us know, again, in the contact section of our website as well as on social media. Just let us know that I like the subject. Can you please give us more information about it? Now, we've got a third question that we need to answer for someone else. And what is that, Ben?
Yes, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but the big question a lot of people have is, how do I avoid the race down? Or another way to rephrase it would be, how do I compete against people who are looking for lower and lower prices?
Yeah, that's a really important thing. And a situation like this would be if a company asks you to place a bid for a project. And, you know, that's totally valid. If you're a design company, you've got employees, you've got investors, and you have the cash flow to fight for a bid. As a freelancer, or even, you know, a team of two, or maybe even a team of three, that's basically a race to the bottom for you. And going back to the part of the first segment, know when to say no, and I would just decline that project. I don't race to the bottom. I've worked a lot for my design set, my design skills, and it's worth a certain amount of money that I'll accept for it. And I will not bid for a project, no matter how much I like that project or not, because I think that's a race to the bottom. You, myself, Ben, as creative people, you've worked really hard and have gone to school for a specific skill set that no one else has, and that should be worth something to companies. So if somebody's asking you to race to the bottom, I would say decline. And like I said in the first segment, sometimes you're not in that position, but if you can, do decline, because it may be easier to find another client that won't try to undercut you. The other part of that is, you know, you can't, as if you live in a Western country, the United States, Europe, places like that, where the cost of living is higher and you're competing against other countries where the cost of living is lower, that will accept a lower amount, you're not going to be able to compete with that.
You're never going to win that fight.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I should hope that you've gotten your skill set to a high enough level to where most employers would be like, obviously, we're going to go with Ben or with Hector or, you know, another Maroon Vault Studio listener, because you guys are all awesome. And, you know, you would just say no, knowing that your skills are more valuable, because you just can't compete economically with a country with a lower cost of living.
No.
But you can have other advantages.
Sure.
Time zone advantages is one. You're in the same time, maybe 3 hours at the most.
I mean, the big one is make sure you communicate better.
Exactly.
I mean, my God.
Yeah, exactly. And if your client is in the same country, you can communicate well, you can communicate better. And here's the thing, and I've done this before, is essentially say, look, you can hire me for a certain amount of money, and I'll communicate with those other guys asking for a lower bid, and we'll both come up with a really nice project for you for a lower cost. And that's you basically not designing and just project managing, if that's what you're into.
Yeah, that could work. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's you making the best of a certain situation, and which could actually work out, because you're not really designing, you're just project managing. And so that means that you're not hunkered down over a desk drawing all hours of the night.
Right.
So that could be another service that you offer, which is also another service that we offer for our design companies, that we have a project management service as well as a sourcing service, to where it's just all logistics.
Mm-hmm.
So as a freelancer, another tip is essentially that people from other companies are going to be asking, hey, do you do graphic design? Even if you're not a graphic designer. Hey, can you talk to this factory overseas? Or hey, can you do engineering? And that might not be your forte. It's important that you communicate and say, hey, look, I'm not an engineer, but I know enough to be dangerous, if that is your situation.
Right.
If you know nothing about electrical engineering and they ask you, hey, do you do electrical engineering? And you say yes, don't do that.
Bad idea.
Bad idea. So for myself, I'm not an electrical engineer, so I don't say that I am. Although I'm not a mechanical engineer, but I know enough to be dangerous. So generally what I say is that I can do the initial mechanical engineering for you. And what I'll do is I'll submit those solutions to a certified mechanical engineer to make sure all the ideas are correct. But that will be an additional fee on the budget.
Right.
So, yeah, basically that's it. If somebody is going to ask you to bid or race to the bottom, I'd say respectfully decline and find another client that won't do that. I generally stay away from those types of clients. Like I said, there's room in the industry for guys like that, and maybe there are other industries where that's kind of the standard. But from my experience as an industrial designer, automotive designer, product designer, I don't go for projects that ask you to bid.
Yeah, fair.
So those are the three questions that we were going to answer for today. So like I said, we're working on this new formula of a Q&A situation. So if you have any further questions that you'd like for us to elaborate, again, do go to our website, www.maroonvaultstudio.com. Go to the contact section and ask us your question. If it's short enough for us to answer, we will answer it on the spot. And if it takes a little bit longer to explain that answer, we will answer it on our podcast episode.
Yay.
Yay, indeed. And in addition to that, if you don't want to go to our website, although you should because we've got a bunch of other information there and a few downloadables, you can hit me up on my social media. My social media on Instagram is at I am Hector Real. That is the at symbol, the letter I, the letter A, the letter M, Hector Real. And same situation, you can go ahead and DM me or comment a question. I will answer it if it's a short answer. Otherwise, I will address it on a future episode of Maroon Cast.
Cool.
Anything to add, Ben?
Nope. It's been a fun episode. I hope those answers help you guys in your small business, entrepreneur, and freelancing futures.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if there's something that we can do to help you out, please feel free to answer us. I think it's great content for us and we enjoy talking about it. And, you know, we'll see you on the next Maroon Cast episode.
Yeah, y'all have a nice one.